I would like the ship to go. Now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Discussing Trek. We are back to cover the third episode of the fifth season, the fifth and final season of Star Trek Discovery, Janal. And like always, I have my fellow co-host, Last Trekkies. And I'm going to start with the returning guest here. So glad he was able to make it tonight. Jonathan Schwartz, how you doing, man?
Excited to be back talking Trek with you guys. It's been a while. And let me tell you something. You guys probably know this well. Maybe you don't. But there's not a lot of people that like to talk Trek in regular everyday life.
What? So how is that possible?
So you know how you sometimes make a Trek reference and you get it and it's great to you, but everybody else is looking like, what are you talking about? Oh, God. So I say all that to say, happy to be back here, man. Happy to be back and talking this new season of Discovery with you guys.
And also on the podcast, we have none other than Cal Jones. How are you doing, sir?
You know, I'm going to second what you said. Very happy to see Jonathan Schwartz again. Just trying to decide, is this going to be a week where Jonathan and I agree or Jonathan and I disagree? So whichever one it is, it means that he's got to come back at least one more this season so that we can not agree or agree. But yeah, I'm glad to be here.
And also on the podcast, we have none other than Larry Irby. How are you doing, man?
Doing great. So I'm the last man out this week. Is that
what you're we're not doing? Hey, we saved the best for last.
Jonathan knew to show up because I saw him. I knew he was alive. I saw him on here with you, and we were going to come looking for him. I said, man, he's trying to play us.
I will use that to transition into our book club, Section 32, or whatever we're calling our book club. If you want to hear us talk about the autobiography of Benjamin Sisko, you can check out our chapter at a time review of that book that we're very much enjoying. We release it here on YouTube, but we also release it early on Patreon. If you want to check that out, that's patreon.com/discussingnetwork.
Open a channel.
Open a channel.
Open a channel.
Open a channel.
Open a channel to all decks.
Before we get into the actual review, I want to talk a little bit about Star Trek news. We got some announcements, and we know that Strange New Worlds will be coming back for yet another season. They're currently filming the next season, but we're going to have one more after that. But Lower Decks is ending with their fifth and final season. Is five seasons the new precedent for Star Trek shows on Paramount Plus? How do you guys feel about this?
I'm fine with it. I mean, I love Lower Decks and everything, but I think you are right. I think five seasons, I think, is going to be the new seven going forward for all these shows. I don't see Stranger
Worlds
going beyond five seasons.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the new norm.
So, Cal, you're a fan of one of the longest running television shows ever, but having these five seasons for these Star Trek shows, how do you feel about that, man? Is that enough? Having, you know, not only five seasons, but only maybe 10 episodes, 10 to 12 episodes per season. I know that's a very British thing to kind of have those shorter seasons. How do you feel about that in Star Trek?
You know, I think it's just the change of the medium. You know, we've had off the mic or whatever discussions about how the industry is changing. You know, behind the scenes, we've talked about that. And maybe this is just the result of the industry changing. You're expecting as a viewer to get these high budget special effects, but then how can they pay for it? So, you know, this is the handoff. And I think I've made this analogy previously in regards to Discovery when we found out that it was being canceled. It's much easier to bring in a new cast and pay them new cast day rates or new cast salaries as it is. I'm sure Sonequa Martin-Green, is her pay in season one and her pay in season five has changed. I think that would probably be a given, as with many others who pay has probably changed. So I think it's just the part and parcel of how things are. And you referenced a long run, and we're talking about Doctor Who. Doctor Who has changed as well. Look at, you know, when it came back in 2005, we're looking at 13 episodes and a Christmas special. Now we're seeing 8 and a Christmas special.
with the amount of money they're putting into each of these episodes, I can't even argue too much, because I was just rewatching tonight's episode they were going to review, and I was kind of in awe of how great it looked. Because the first time I watched it on my computer just to, you know, kind of take it in and get a quick thoughts out. But man, they are putting a lot of money into these shows and they just look beautiful. So I think I can take less shows if it's going to continue to look as beautiful as these shows have been.
I don't know. I'm kind of along the lines. I would take less. As long as the story's good, I would be okay with less lower production budget and more shows.
Okay. I guess that's fair. But
I'm in it for the story, though. The pretty stuff I can get from Star Wars or something.
I want to give a shout out to everybody in the chat. Of course, we have Wynn Grace. We have Marge. We have Tasha from After the Snap. Thank you guys for here. We're going to go ahead right into our review of Janal. Star Trek Discovery, Season 5, Episode 3, Janal. On Trill, Captain Burnham, Book, and Culber must pass a dangerous test to prove themselves worthy of the next clue. Adira reconnects with Gray, and Saru's first day as ambassador is complicated by his engagement to Tarina. The episode is written by Cal Jaro and Lauren Wilkinson and directed by Andy Armaganian.
So for everyone listening, if you have not seen this episode, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Red alert. All hands stand to battle station.
What gives you the right?
You cannot destroy an idea.
At ease before you spray.
No, let them swallow the milk.
The spoiler warning has been dropped, and as always, we come right back to Mr. Jones for the beats of the episode. Sometimes serious, sometimes comedic. Honestly, you never know. Mr. Jones, what do you have for us today,
sir? Yes, sir. Exactly. So, permission to speak freely. Scratch that. Here's what I think anyway.
All right, Raynor. Go ahead and do your thing. Let's go around the horn and get everybody's high-level thoughts of this episode. Jonathan, let's start with you, man. What do you think of this episode?
I did love this episode. Can we just all be honest? I just love the fact that we're back on Trill. All right. Like, Trill has always been the place that I've always intrigued me the most. It's the most interesting part of Trek I've seen. So I was glad to see us go back there. I don't know, man. It's the only complaint I have, and it's kind of over the first two episodes as well. I feel like we're spending a lot of, you remember on Dragon Ball Z, you'd have these times like it's the story is happening, but they spend a lot of time in the emotion of it. And that's kind of what I'm getting here. We're spending way too much time in the emotion of it.
I guess that's fair. I think I really enjoyed the downtime parts of this episode. But alas, let's hear everybody else's thoughts. Larry, what do you think, man?
Personally, I thought this episode was fun. It was very engaging. Just overall, a fun Star Trek episode.
I think I'm going to agree with Jonathan because I enjoyed this episode. There's nothing that I have that I can say that I disliked about it. But knowing that this is the last season, I just kind of wanted a little bit more. And I'm not sure what more is, but I kind of wanted a little bit more. But again, I have no complaints, but I felt like I wanted a little more.
You know what? As I watched it again and, you know, you go into review mode and you try to pick up the beats of the episode. And I think it may have been Wynn Grace's review. I think he may have kind of used the word filler a little bit to explain it. And I didn't feel like that. I didn't feel that way the first time I watched it. But I can see why it would come off as filler, because honestly, the story doesn't progress that much. You know, we went to one place. As Jonathan mentioned, we had all these character moments. But that's what I really loved about it. I loved all the stuff with Tarina and Saru. I love the stuff with Raynor and Pitt's reluctance to, or seeming reluctance to get acquainted with the crew. And I thought Wilson Cruz, as Culber, as Janal, gave just an excellent performance. And we're going to go through each of those beats. But let's start first with Saru and Tarina. Larry, what do you think about this relationship? Saru's in his new position as ambassador, and immediately we could see things start to go wrong. I kind of felt for the guy, but what do you think about his newfound situation with Tarina and his ambassadorship?
I think he's, you know, discovering he's going to have to balance. See, remember, Saru's just been in Starfleet. Ever since he left his home planet, he's been a Starfleet officer. He's had a clear thing that he wants to do. He's got a mission. He's got an assignment. Whatever he does to the full. It's straight ahead, straightforward, right? Mm-hmm. Not so much when you're dealing with being an ambassador, dealing with different factions, dealing with different egos. And to be honest, I liked it. I like to see Saru have to go, okay, this is new. Let me find out what I need to do. I also love the fact that now he's got a relationship. So not only does he have to deal with balancing his new job, he also has to deal with, oh, sometime I'm going to come into conflict with the love of my life.
Yes.
But I liked it. I thought it was, I didn't feel like it was forced. I felt like this was something that would happen.
I, again, like the maturity of their relationship. And I love the fact that they presented this political meandering, I'll call it, between Saru, Tarina, and her associate that was kind of playing them both to get that political point of view, which he had a valid point. I don't agree with what he did, but he had a totally valid point. But what I liked about it was we didn't push this into two or three episodes later until we resolve it. It's resolved. They have the talk. It was done appropriately. That I really, really liked.
Well, the question is, was it resolved this episode?
Well, between the two of them, it was resolved. Now, there may be political fallout, but like she said, is it better to go ahead and say what's what and then deal with the ramifications of that as still being what's what and let it look like we covered it up?
I agree 100% with that. And I think it is resolved as far as they're concerned. But I think the assistant guy, and I don't forget his name, I think there's a different motive involved that I think we're going to wind up getting into. I don't know is it the Vulcan separatists or something he was saying that he was complaining about? Purist, there you go. And I don't know, just anytime we deal with that separate faction of Vulcans that kind of goes against the grain, it's always a longer, deeper story there. There's always an angle they're working. And I don't know if he's part of that, or they're trying to. Maybe they're worried that Saru is going to kind of put a halt to a plan that they've been working on for so long. That's kind of, and maybe I'm reaching for a plot that really shouldn't be there. But it just seemed like it was going to be something bigger, even though they resolved it in this episode.
Yeah, for me, I'm not entirely sure. I think it's a bigger plot. I kind of feel it was just there to see Saru squirm a little bit. Because, you know, it's funny about the relationship. It's like so almost childlike in a way, but also so pure that Saru is just like a deer in headlights. He hasn't even thought of the possibility of them having conflict. Because, you know, they said a honeymoon phase. I guess he was still in the honeymoon phase. And he made a decision that he thought was right. But it's like the little kid that goes to both parents and asks for the same thing. He got played. He definitely got played. And it's definitely a trust factor of him just trusting Tarina that she's a Vulcan, of course. She's already thought of this. He has just has a trust that she's already thought of this and already considered what it might be having him there as ambassador and how that could, you know, cause conflict.
So I want to pick up a comment that Marge said. She said, I like Tarina's approach of welcoming the conflict as part of the relationship.
Yeah, I'm anti-conflict, so I'm like Saru up there. I'm squirming like, what, you know,
but there's a difference between unhealthy conflict and problem resolution. So I think maybe even though she said conflict, maybe it's better worded approach of welcoming conflict resolution as part of a relationship.
And, you know, I think another part we're going to eventually see is, you know, as much as Saru would like to be anti-conflict and anti-problems, I think this relationship, other than the political drama that he's bound to get anyway, I think he's going to miss that extra drama. Like, he can't, you know, with Michael, he kind of had, even though he was first officer, he still kind of had that, I'm going to watch over you. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to advise you role. I think with Serena, it's going to be almost opposite. And I don't think he's going to be able to deal with that right off. And maybe he'll learn. But, I mean, we went really quickly from a very quiet, timid Saru to a very in-control, sort of dominant overseer Saru. And now he's kind of flipping backwards the other way.
I'll say this. Number one, I loved Tarina basically saying, look, I got this. Yeah. You know, I've already thought this out. I knew this was a possibility. And I think she appreciated what Saru was trying to do, even though it was way misplaced. And I think she had to let him know, look, I can handle my own business. You and me are together. This is what it is. I'll handle my business. Okay. Everything's good between us. And I thought that was very mature, very healthy for a relationship.
Yeah, great to see. I mean, sad for Saru, but great to see a little trouble in the homestead. I thought that was a good character play for both of them. Let's get into Mr. Raynor, demoted from being a captain, now commander, and he is now first officer aboard the USS Discovery. How convenient as Saru leaves. There's many things I really loved about this, and I think the biggest thing for me, I mean, besides Raynor being a total jerk, which he was, I love that we got ever so slightly a bit or a peek into the different crew members. It reminded me a little bit of season two when Pike comes on and gets the call out of everybody on the bridge. We kind of got that with Burnham, giving him the introduction to everybody as he came on the bridge the first time. So for me, I think this was more about understanding the characters more and understanding maybe Tilly a little bit more, because I thought she was fantastic in these moments as well. What do we think about Raynor getting acquainted with the crew?
So I like the fact that it kind of surprised us at the end that he was a little bit more observant than what I think we were giving him credit for at the beginning. So he has his own style. I don't like his style. I'm not saying I don't like the character. I don't like the style. I love the fact that it was Tilly that called him out, because technically she's not part of the crew anymore. She's there as a Federation, and I know he probably outranks her, et cetera, and so forth. But I like that she called him out, and I'm curious as to where that goes. So,
well, you know, I tell you how I feel about this actor. I just think he can do no wrong in my eyes. He's so good. And he always has been. But I'm going to be straight up about Raynor. I love this character. I heard some people try to compare him to Captain Shaw, because we're sci-fi fans and that's what we do. And I say they're nothing alike to me. But Raynor is that kind of dude, like what Kyle said. I love the fact, I said, watch, I could have written this episode. When they questioned him on why were you so dismissive to those people, I said, he's going to know everything. He's going to remember everything those people told him. And he did. But that's also great character development. Like, hey, man, just because I don't hold everybody's hands and kiss your butt, it doesn't mean I don't care about you. And I'm not here to look out for this crew.
But isn't that maybe a conflict of his role of being more standoffish, to where you have a Riker that knows everybody, or a Chakotay that, you know, is intimate with each member of the crew? Doesn't he have to shift that a little bit in order to fulfill his duties successfully? What do you think, John?
Well, number one, we have to remember he has to transition from mindset of a captain to a first officer, right? So that's, I mean, and Picard was standoffish with the crew for the most part. I mean, he was a little more cordial than Raynor, but I mean, he still was kind of, there's a distance. I think Janeway kind of tried to do that until she realized we're out here by ourselves. So at some point I'm going to have to, right? So that's part of being a captain. As a first officer, I think you are that bridge between captain and crew, and he's going to have to form that bridge, right? He's going to have to develop that side of himself. That being said, it's kind of, as far as this beginning part of Discovery's new season, it was a welcome break from what we have going on. We're spending a lot of time, and I get it, there's a lot of character development going on, but we're spending a lot of time in emotions. And he was kind of that break in that for us. You know what I mean? Like, I think at times I kind of felt myself saying, okay, I get it, but we got to do something, guys. We got to do something. And kind of goes to previous episode when they were on that planet, Michael and Book discussing like this previous mission they went on and what they were going to call it. And you remember this. And he's like, hey, let's go do this. Right. Yeah. Like we need somebody to like, hey guys, let's do that later. So I think he's going to be a welcome addition to the crew, but I think he will be forced to soften up a bit.
So the only thing I'll add to that, when we say lack of emotion, it could be interpreted that it was full of emotion, and the awkwardness is his own internal struggle of, I was this, now I'm this. They're all looking at me like you've been demoted, et cetera, and so forth. So you could look at it from that perspective. Not saying that's what it is, but it could be.
Definitely. And I mean, we don't know what his situation was like on his ship, right? Like his first officer could have been a Deanna Troi. Like in that case, if you have Deanna Troi as your first officer, like she's handling all of that. She has enough emotional, you know, she can deal with enough emotions that you don't have to. So we don't know what it was like on his last ship and how he operated. So again, it's just going to have to, they're going to force a change, and I think it's coming, but it was welcomed in this episode.
Yeah, for me, just seeing him and Tilly, you know, we saw them make a bond at the end. And as you mentioned, Larry, like he was remembering everything. Now, while he was very standoffish and still kind of focused on Maul and Locke, he was still dialed in to hear everything everybody said. So I think just a different mode of operation from Captain to First Officer. So he has to make the adjustment there. Pick up a few comments real quick. We have Marge saying, I think I agree that Rayner should not have to tour the ship to meet everyone. A reception might have served to introduce him to the crew. Yeah, I think that could work. You know, maybe the first officer needs one-on-ones. I don't know. I don't know if I've ever seen that before so specifically, but I can see why, I guess. Wingray saying, we saw early Picard and even Janeway struggling to keeping their crew as crew and not family. Yeah, certainly. So I think that's a good growth arc for Rayner. I can agree. And Tasha's saying, especially since he was concerned with multitasking, something important. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, man. I said in the previous episode that I loved Rayner, and I think I still love him, even with this harsh attitude that he came in with. I think, like you just mentioned, guys, he's going to mellow out as the season goes on. So that's kind of the arc we're going to see from him. But maybe we might need a cowboy. Remember that, too. We might need a cowboy.
Well, let me ask you guys this question. How do you think the dynamic with he and Michael is going to work out through the season?
I think he is what she needs. I think it's going to be great, honestly. It's a good balance because I don't know where I mentioned this before, but Saru is first officer. Saru is never going to be as aggressive as maybe he needs. Because sometimes Michael, I mean, she's a captain, but maybe sometimes the captain needs to be put in their place. And maybe not so much of just like forcefully, but having the wherewithal to be like, look, we can't do this because X, because Y, this is not the best approach. And while I feel Saru probably would have done that, I feel like he would have been quicker to give in.
And yes, you're right. What I worry about is will he have a boundary, a limit to how far he'll take that? So, I mean, even with her, you know, on the top of a ship at warp and he could have killed her and he wouldn't let it go because due to the mission, like how far will that go? And we understand he's a Starfleet captain. He's been in Starfleet for 30 plus years. So he understands rank and he understands his place. But again, you're asking a captain to now take orders. You're asking a captain to step back. He's very strong-willed. If he thinks it's the right thing to do, of course we want him to, you know, express that with Michael, right? But at some point, Michael's going to be like, no, this. Is he going to say okay, or is he going to keep fighting?
The only thing I can add to that is he could have gone home. True. He made a choice to stay. So with staying comes being in second.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he understands that, but in action, I don't know if he's going to be able to do it.
All right, guys, let's go to Trill. We're back there. No, we mentioned already that we love being there.
I don't like it.
You don't? Oh, what did you not like about going back to Trill?
I don't like Trill because the last time we were there, I cried like a baby. I don't want to remember that.
Which episode was that the last time we were there?
When we had Adira, when she came to the, got all her memories of all the past hosts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was awesome.
Ooh, destroyed me. Now, we love Trill, of course. And I will say this, too. I'm really glad that when they did the ceremony and transferred the consciousness, which we saw on DS9, gotta get at love, they did not do the trill spots. I was glad they didn't do that. Because one other time they did that, they transferred a consciousness, and then the person also had the chair. And I was like, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, I think that was only one occurrence. So I think that was they transferred to Odo, and the only reason he took the spots was because of his changeling genetics. Mm.
Yeah, it did make no sense, though.
It was fun, though.
but I love Trill. Number one, what is the dude's name who's the head person in charge?
Guardian Z.
Guardian Z. Like I said, another phenomenal character actor who's been around forever. But I loved being on Trill. I loved the performances and seeing Adira and Gray. Oh, that's a long story right there.
Well, do we want to dive into their relationship first? It's yet another case of possibly coming to an end. It sounds like coming to an end, but they resolve, just like Book and Burnham sort of resolve their relationship. Adira and Gray resolve theirs. Expected? Are you okay with it? Does it just leave us path to go somewhere else for the rest of the season?
I'm okay with it, and I'm going to tell you why. Young love. Probably everybody here dated somebody at one point in your life, or everybody in the chat, that you thought you were going to be with for the rest of your life. And that's just not how it worked out.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That is real life right there. And to me, and I hope, don't make them get back together by the end of the season or nothing. I mean, it's good that they both have their own separate lives. They still love each other, but hey, you know, we've got our own separate paths. Again, another very adult moment for Discovery.
And I think it's in order for Adira to grow, this has to happen, right? Mm. I think that's been kind of a anchor to prevent taking on more responsibility here. Adira's mind is always focused in multiple places, and that's just another layer worrying about Gray. So I think it's going to help in the long run, and it's going to help his character development as well.
I can agree with that. Any other thoughts on Gray and Adira, Cal, before we move on into the other happenings on
No,
Trill?
I think they said everything pretty much that needed to be said.
All right, man. Well, I'll start this with you, man. The transfer of consciousness from Janal Bix into Culber. What did you think? What did you think about Wilson Cruz's performance?
I forgot completely forgot that he was Culber. He did such an amazing job that I'm like 15, 20 minutes of him being the character, and I'm remembering, oh, wait, that's Culber. The mannerisms were different. The way he stood was different. The way he talked was different. You know, he completely pulled off using the same outfit, same, you know, wardrobe or whatever you want to say. He came off as completely different person. So, you know, he was the highlight of this episode to me.
Yeah, a little behind the scenes of his portrayal on the Ready Room. He didn't even foreshadow how he would perform the character to anyone. So when he first went into that Batman-esque voice, you know, a little bit deeper than his normal voice, Sonequa Martin-Green and David Ajala didn't even know he was going there. So they were looking at him like, what? So yeah. I'll let you guys talk, but I was floored by his performance. I just wish there was more of it. It was relatively short when you think about how long he was actually in that character. But man, it made me want to have just a Culber series because he knocked it out of the park to me.
Number one, Wilson Cruz is awesome. We all know that. So love the man, talented performer. And seriously, if he doesn't get a ton of work when Discovery ends, something's wrong.
Oh yeah.
Because he just killed. I too was like, when he was like, well, I had to see what you were going to do. I had to see, were you worthy? And that's becoming a big theme with finding this technology. Who's worthy? Who's not going to abuse it? Because even in the hands of somebody good can still be abused.
Yeah. I find it very interesting how they put all of these tests in place. I mean, to even approach Janal, the big symbiote, you had to answer this question. So man, what is this tech? I guess we can table that question, but what is this actual tech that killed one of the people that tried it out and they don't want anyone else to find? They even call out the Dominion War as being one of the reasons they didn't want to give it to anybody because it's so powerful. So yeah, we definitely have to unpack that at some point because, man, they're really playing it up.
I remember that TNG episode that when they found the, I want to keep on to say makers because I've been watching Enterprise, but was it progenitors?
Yeah.
And just whatever the technology is, I'm in 100% agreement. Like, and I disagree with Janal and the original people 800 years ago that said, you know, eventually we'll be able to, this should never, ever, ever, ever be a pot. They should have destroyed it right then and right there. Right. Like that, that's my feeling. I think, and I mean, we've seen it right throughout Discovery. When we think the Federation and we think people are good. Yes, that's what we're always striving to. But I don't think it'll ever be to the point that they're expecting it to be at, that it'll be okay to have this power. Right. So I don't know. I'm hoping this is the one time I'm hoping that this turns out to be kind of a burn situation, not as bad as we think it's going to be. Yeah. You know, if it really does what they say it does or what it's capable of, that's not something I don't trust Federation with it. I don't trust Starfleet with it. And I sure don't trust Section 31 with it. And just to kind of run back on that Janal character, I agree with you guys on what y'all said. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. And, you know, there's always been something in DS9 that you kind of see a confidence that a joined trio has that's mm-hmm. been around for a while. And it's not something you can script. It's not something you can portray. Like, you just kind of have to do it. And not everybody can do it. Like, we've seen that with... Ezri
Don't
Dex?
Say it. Don't say it, man. Well, she was great. I
loved Ezri. I loved Ezri. But she didn't have, and that's probably on purpose, but you still miss that trio confidence that you see from Jadzia, Curzon. And so we see that again in Janal. And for Wilson Cruz to be able to pull that off so naturally, change his voice, still do it in the same clothes, but he also changed his mannerisms, the speed at which he walked and moved. Like, all of that to me was just great. And it's kind of a reference back to what happens when you're joined trio. Like, why is it so important to be joined? Why does trio live their life to do that? And like, if you get to be that, that's how important it is.
Yeah, I can totally agree with that. Kyle, do you have any additional thoughts? What about that fight with the Itronox? any thoughts on any other
Not parts really, of- honestly. That was the only part that kind of was like predictable to me and felt a little preordained and a little boring, to be honest with you. But I mean, I thought it was, you know, it reached its appropriate resolution, but no thoughts.
Yeah, I kind of, when you know, this is the clip that they previewed to us like a year ago. In the preview, I kind of hated it. But for some reason in this episode, seeing it in continuity with everything else, I kind of loved it. I kind of like these Itronox, these cloaking, dart shooting beasts. I thought they were kind of cool concept to have in the show and have a little action. You know, we got Book doing his thing of trying to talk to it. And eventually it was just to get him off the scent to see if they'd really kill these things just to pursue this next piece of the puzzle. But honestly, I thought they were fun. I thought it was interesting. I like this action piece way more than I like the action pieces in the first two episodes, with the exceptions of a few parts. So yeah, I thought it was fun. But again, I think it goes back to my point that honestly, there wasn't a whole lot going on in this episode. It was all about the character moments.
I was going to say this, and I know it's going to make Kyle and Clarence upset, but I'm throwing the Doctor Who references because I know y'all don't like Doctor Who. But seriously, do you remember when they said they were not giving the technology because it might be misused? And they were talking about, you know, the Dominion War was raging.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Starfleet or the Romulans or that side had that technology, would they use? It's kind of like Doctor Who. Remember how when they were fighting the Daleks and they emptied the vault of all the forbidden weapons?
Mm-hmm.
They were that desperate that they used everything. That's what popped into my head.
Mm.
Would the Federation have used that technology against the Dominion, because the Federation was close to getting defeated.
Yeah, I think they definitely would have.
You think they would?
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too, that, and I think this is a very now concept where you have these different countries where we aren't really friends with the countries, but there's always these elite people or these scientists that can come together, whether it's going to the space station or doing something very scientific on a remote location. We could always come together for science's sake. So I thought it was cool that we had these group of doctors, scientists, or whatever that came together and looked at the greater good and didn't just think about their respective races or countries or whatever. So I thought that was really interesting. Let's pick up a few comments here. We have Marge speaking of Adira and Gray saying, these two characters are so important as LGBTQ representatives that they deserved a respectful closure. Yes, I can agree. And who knows if this is the end of their relationship, but yeah, I think they gave them a good send off, and you know, who knows what happened next. Marge also mentioned that Janal was 100% believable. Oh, and I have to mention my favorite part of maybe my favorite quote of the season so far, Kobler saying that, well, I guess it was Janal saying it. Wow, this guy really works out.
Yeah.
That's the line of the season right now. I think we can agree on that one.
Yeah, that was good.
It's like, all right, Wilson, getting a little cocky. Dude does work out though, man.
He does. He dude's in shape. Rick Hernandez saying that the whole pursuit of the progenitor tech, I think that's what he's talking about, is saying the most interesting part of the season. And Wynn Grace mentioning that a little hubris. The Federation with a prime directive thinks they're above the law when it comes to another higher power giving them tech. I'm like you, John. I don't trust anybody with this stuff. I think they should have destroyed it, if I'm being honest, because yeah, I don't think we can trust anybody with something so supposedly so powerful.
And, you know, we had, again, I'm going through Enterprise, and, you know, the Zindi created this big world-destroying weapon, and it was just, which this is not the Federation, but, you know, even Andorians came to help, and little did Captain Archer know they really were intending on taking this weapon to use it as a defense against the Vulcans. And and that's what's scary, right? Because the Andorians really didn't have like a mean malcontent about it. Like they were trying to defend themselves against a maybe possibly stronger force.
Yeah.
So, and kind of goes back to what you guys were saying earlier. I mean, during the Dominion Wars, would the Federation have used it? Well, I mean, generally I would think not. Right. But when you think that it's the best idea, because I mean, I can hear it now, Federation Council saying, well, we have to do this to save the Alpha Quadrant. Right. But then where do you go from there after you've done it? And then the next person, maybe a changeling survives and the changeling says, well, now we need to do it to save our people.
Every is.
So,
man.
I mean, it should never. And I'm hoping we get to that point where it's either destroyed or is really not as powerful as they think.
So, Larry, we saw a symbiote funeral, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we've seen that before in that sense.
We haven't, but they live a long time, though, don't they?
They do, man. Like, God, he's still here. Okay.
I know, and everybody wants to see Dax. I said, dude, I don't know if Dax is living 800 years. Dax is already doing Deep Space Nine. Dax is already, what, 300 or something?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's like over 1,000 years. But I wanted to know Kyle's opinion on that, because there's another show. Expanse does something like that too. I'm not going to spoil any of that because it's too awesome. But like that made me think of what will we do when it gets really dark? How far will we go?
Well, and one last thing about this technology, and you know, we're kind of debating whether we would or wouldn't, but I mean, just think we have a character right now in Discovery that I know for a fact we use it. Kovic.
Maybe, but honestly, I'm so confused about who Kovic is, and even when Grace mentions it here, I'm so confused about who that guy is. Like, I don't know what he'd do, honestly.
Well, that's still scary.
But I don't think his intentions are bad, but he's such a mysterious character. We don't know anything about him.
And not that I think his intentions are bad, but even on that mission up to that planet, like, he wasn't really caring about saving those people from a landslide at first.
he was, and he did say we have to follow this red directive,
right?
And forget what, you know, the fallout of doing that. I do get you, and I think that's where I think Rayner kind of aligns more to his philosophy versus what the Federation Council was thinking. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it play out. Guys, any other takeaways before we wrap up here and give our ratings for the episode? How did you rate this on the scale of 1 to 5? What do you think? How would you rate this one? Let us know in the chat. Cal, I'll start with you. What is your rating for this episode, sir?
I will give this 4 permissions to speak freely out of 5.
Larry, what do you think, man? How would you rate this one?
I'm definitely going to give it a 4. I thought it was really good episode. I didn't think it was outstanding, but very good.
All right, Jonathan, how would you rate this one, sir?
I'm going to just fall in line with the rest of you guys and call it a 4. I think it was a really solid episode. We get Huber's character as Janelle. I love that. But kind of back to the top, as I said, we spent a little too much time in the feelings of everything, which kind of knocked it down for me.
Oh, man, I think we're all in agreement on this one. I'm going to give this 4 Hugh Culbers as Janals out of 5. And because, again, like I love Wilson Cruz's performances. I know you don't like the character moments in this, John, but I thought all the character moments were pretty fun. I liked seeing more of the crew, albeit just for a minute. I love seeing them come in and we get these crazy tidbits about who they are, what they've done. Reese is the ship guy. Linus has a lot of babies. Three different sets of babies. I liked all that. Dr. Pollard's thing and Jet Reno. Did we mention Jet Reno? Anytime Jet Reno is an episode, you know, Tig Notaro's amazing. So we got that. So we gotta give it a little love. And let's go to the chat. We have Tasha saying 4 out of 5. We have Marge saying 4 out of 5 cloaking moths. We have Wayne Gray saying, I think 4. Least favorite episode, but Culber was the shining star. And he says 4 Maul tracking devices out of 5. Yeah, Maul like just laid a tracking device on Adira as she was going back toward the ship. So that doesn't get screened out by the biofilters or anything. I don't know. Seems like it would be a problem, but we'll see. We'll see. We have Maul and Locke on their tail to wherever they're going next. So.
And can I give a shout out to Morn's distant, great, 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 great time, 800-year grandchild sitting at the bar? Still at the bar.
Hey, we don't know how long his races live. We don't know how long. It could be the same Morn.
You have 4 stomachs, I'm sure you can.
All right, guys, thank you all for joining. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for staying with us through our minor technical difficulties here. We'll be back next week with the next episode. And until next time, guys, live long and prosper. Thanks for listening to the Discussing Trek podcast. For more information, go to discussingtrek.com/subscribe.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.
Can I say that, like, shut up, Wesley? I can just go, shut up, Clarence?